Von Suchotsky was no longer part of his company. He had no ties to the corporation and, if anything, may even have felt bitter about the way he had been ousted. Perhaps, too, he felt some responsibility. One of the girl's allies later wrote of him, "I feel absolutely satisfied that there is no prejudice, but every desire to assist in a useful way." And that is what von Suchotsky now did. Together with Doctors Hoffman and Kniff, the trio admitted Marguerite to St. Mary's Hospital in Orange to find out what was the matter with her. On admittance, she was anemic and weighed 90 pounds, 6.5 stone. Her pulse was small, rapid, and irregular. She was hanging on, but barely. A week or so after she was admitted, which was partly thanks to Hoffman's intervention, the statistician did the dial painters his biggest service yet. He read his paper on their problems before the American Medical Association, the first major study to connect the women's illnesses to their work. The first, that is, to be made public. And his opinion was thus. The women were slowly poisoned as a result of introducing into the system minute quantities of radioactive substance. That minute was important. For the company, all the radium companies, believed dial painting to be safe because there was such a tiny amount of radium in the paint. But Hoffman had realised that it wasn't the amount that was the problem. It was the cumulative effect of the women taking the paint into their body, day in and day out, dial after dial. The amount of radium in the paint may have been small, but by the time you had been swallowing it every single day for 3 or 4 or 5 years in a row, there was enough there to cause you damage, particularly when, as the drinkers had already realised, radium was even more potent internally and headed straight for your bones. As early as 1914, specialists knew that radium could deposit in bone and cause changes in the blood. The radium clinics researching such effects thought that the radium stimulated the bone marrow to produce extra red blood cells, which was a good thing for the body. In a way, they were right. That was exactly what happened. Ironically, the radium did, at first, boost the health of those it had infiltrated. There were more red blood cells, something that gave an illusion of excellent health. But it was an illusion only. That stimulation of the bone marrow by which the red blood cells were produced soon became overstimulation. The body couldn't keep up. In the end, Hoffman said, the cumulative effect was disastrous, destroying the red blood cells, causing anemia and other ailments, including necrosis. He concluded emphatically, "We are dealing with an entirely new occupational affection demanding the utmost attention." And then, perhaps thinking of Marguerite's lawsuit, which was dragging sluggishly through the legal system, added that the disease should be brought under the workmen's compensation laws. Catherine Wiley was, in fact, attempting to do just that through her work with the Consumers League, campaigning to have radium necrosis added to the list of compensable diseases. In the meantime, Marguerite's only hope for justice was the federal court, but her case was unlikely to be heard before the fall. As Alice Hamilton noted with dismay, Miss Carlow may not live till then. Hoffman continued to present his discoveries. He noted that, although he had looked for cases of radium poisoning in other studios across the United States, there was none affected outside of this plant. Unwittingly, Hoffman now revealed exactly why that was, but he didn't grasp the relevance of his statement. "The most sinister aspect of the affliction," he wrote, is that the disease is apparently latent for several years before it manifests its destructive tendencies. Several years. The radium dial studio in Ottawa had been running for less than 3 years.